There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that.
This is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby. That's right. This man knows what's up.
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Friday. Glad to have you all along. Reminder, too, the phone line and the text line open for you at 343. Same digits for both things. 343-0106. 343-0106. Also a reminder for the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of you. I shouldn't remind you because I'm in the top 100 in our college pick'em after last weekend, even though I missed some games really badly in my picks, but I'm still a contender. Make sure you get your picks in before tomorrow. Make sure you get those things sent in and saved before the first game starts so they count for tomorrow and college pick 'em for next week. All right, I mentioned this at the end of the hour. This is kind of good that I went on a little bit of a rant there about the foxes of Dauphin Island. And, yeah, it's going to be a talk about critters because we go right into this hour, and it's good. I've been talking to this guy for a few weeks, and getting him on the show now is a great thing. Christian Hernandez, graduate research assistant at Auburn University. Does that sound about right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So, and your predecessor had been on the show with us a couple of times, and folks got to know her and worked around her with even at my house doing some bear project work. You are looking at black bears in Alabama.
Yes. Specifically, okay. We're looking at reproductive ecology for black bears in Alabama.
Because we'll get to that. I got big questions on that. First of all, so let's find out about you. What makes Christian Hernandez decide, I'm going to get into bears?
Well, it's been a long journey. I kind of think of myself as a wildlife journeyman. I started prairie dogs back in undergrad. From there, okay. I made the jump to sea turtles, eventually elk.
Sea turtles? We're talking about
the business. I know, ties in beautifully.
You went from sea turtles to elk.
Yeah,
there's
I was kind of all over the place, kind of figuring out my niche in the field. And I eventually landed with larger mammals. So from elk went to black bears, and that was definitely my passion, black bears.
Okay, so this is going to be a chance for us to talk about black bears in our area. We're going to find out about the kind of the bottlenecks that Christian sees. Also, I want to ask you, I'll just start off with this question. I've asked people in the past, you're a bear researcher. You get different color faces. I'll get to Alabama bears in a second. Different color phases of black bears out west. I see them, you get cinnamons and blondes and all that. Between Pennsylvania, Florida, Alabama, where I've seen bears growing up, I've never seen anything but a straight black bear.
Yeah, they tend to be pretty typical.
So what's the deal? Why do they have color phases out there and we don't?
I think a lot of it has to do with climate. Here it's consistently warmer. Mm-hmm. I think that definitely plays a role in it. But that's definitely an interesting...
I mean, I've just always wondered, there's tons of black bears out there, like I'll be in Colorado or whatever, and they're black, but then there's a cinnamon, there's a blonde face. I'm like, why don't we get that back home?
Yeah, that'd be nice to see some cinnamon bears out here.
Isn't it weird that, I don't know what happened there west of the Mississippi, or even maybe the 98th parallel, but you'd get the color phases west of there and not here. So you're doing black bears here in Alabama. Let's talk about that population-wise. This discussion is come up over the years. How many, and I know it's hard to say, but I'm going to ask you anyway, it's your job. How many black bears are in the state?
So we have two core populations in Alabama. We have a southern Alabama population here in the Mobile River Basin. There's a newer population up north in DeKalb, Cherokee counties that came from North Georgia. It's a smaller population, but there's a lot of suitable land.
The Smoky Mountain bears, right?
Yeah, just south of the Smokies.
But I mean, that's that population expanding south,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, so they repatriated the area. There's a lot of suitable land there, and they've been doing really well. So they're growing pretty strong there. In the south here, we have a pretty small population. The last estimate was in 2015, and it was about 86 bears. They have been researching this population for the past 20 plus years, and there has not been a lot of signs of growth. So the current estimate is probably not too far off of that 2015 86 bear estimate.
Which is wild. I don't know the all the fecundity rates, but you leave a critter alone that has access to food for a period of time, they increase. I mean, bears take longer than a white-tailed deer or something, but they should have increased. You know, the person that put us together here, I grew up hunting that property and with them. And that was, you know, the Saraland bear population. I remember as a kid, we'd come into school and people, you know, guys get around, what'd you see this weekend? Well, I saw one buck and two does or whatever. I'd say, yeah, we saw this and this. And I saw, you know, a black bear showered a cub. They'd say, yeah, sure you did. And how many lions and tigers did you see? You know, back then it was just unheard of. But to know that the population back then was not that much smaller than it is today is worrisome.
Yeah, absolutely. I would agree. The biggest limiting factor that we have in the South here is suitable denning habitat. And so really, if you want a population to grow, you need to have females that stay in the area. Mm-hmm. And in the South, there's just not a lot of land for them to do that.
What do they need? What, you know, people think about denning, and we could talk about, you know, that we really don't have hibernation here, torpor. But, I mean, they got to have a place to have the little ones.
Right.
What does that den site look like?
That's a great question. I love answering it. So the bears down here in South Alabama are pretty unique. There's not traditional denning habitat, which would be in the form of rocky crevices, right, caves.
Below here, the fall line, yeah.
Yeah, pretty much what they have here is, think like big birds. They make ground nests in really dense vegetation. And that's really the best that they can do down here. And that kind of contributes, you kind of mentioned fecundity grades. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have very low survival of cubs in the South.
Yeah, which is interesting because, or this population here, because I looked to Florida. And, you know, they figured out how to, those bear numbers have come back very strongly,
right,
there. So we go, okay, well, what's that different? Is it habitat-wise? Do they have more denning sites there? Or is it something genetic here? You know, you talked about those bears coming in from the Smokies. I wonder when they meet up here, we get, I think, mixes of the, what we call it, like the Louisiana bears or Mississippi, mm-hmm, bears coming to east, and Florida bears coming west. What's missing? Are we not getting enough genetic mixing? Or
so it is actually a combination of a lot of things, but the Southern Alabama population, based on that 2015 study that Auburn conducted, was found to be geographically and genetically isolated. So there are close bear populations nearby, but there are barriers that are inhibiting them from moving between populations. So they are very isolated, very low genetic diversity.
They're all cousins.
Yeah, they're all related. And then you throw in bad denning habitat into the mix, and it just really lowers the population.
So that denning habitat, though, so if we're looking, the genetic part is obviously a tough one there, but if we're looking at the denning habitat, is there a best practice to create habitat that would be denning? Like so many of us see, and I was showing you pictures before we get started. I live, you know, got bears where I live.
Right.
But it's mostly males. Out looking, either getting kicked out or looking for love or whatever.
Absolutely.
Don't see the number of female. What do I, like, what does the landowner need to do? What would you say if you've made a prescription? Have this on your land. What is it?
I think the biggest thing is continuous habitat. So right now, the landscape of bear habitat in the South is highly fragmented. So think of it as small, suitable pockets separated by roads, separated by development. Mm-hmm. And then to get to another suitable pocket, a female has to cross, you know, major roads to get there, or mm-hmm, there's a new suburban complex. When you break up intact habitat that is suitable for bears, it drastically lowers the carrying capacity for bears that you can successfully have in the habitat.
Does it have to be a widespread connectivity, or could it be corridor-based? You know, like you see some of the stuff in Florida, they've done different corridor stuff.
That would definitely be something to explore. It has mixed success based on where you look at the population, but corridors have been proven to help in some populations. So that is an idea that could potentially be looked at going forward.
I want to talk about, and this is going to be, there's science part, and then there's, well, the human sciences,
right,
part. Your experience taking this job, attitudes about bears in Alabama, South Alabama, what do you see? What do you hear from people? I know you've done some outreach programs, right, and all that. I know a lot of people I talk to, they'll say, you talk about bears all the time. They ask me questions. They seem to have a mix of attitudes. What do you get from talking to people?
I think the overall attitude that I'm getting is a very strong positive connection with the bears. You know, okay, they are the state mammal,
mm-hmm,
and I think just dealing with landowners and dealing with different members of the community, they all seem to have an appreciation, a fascination for them. You mentioned Fontaine Radcliffe Howard. She is just a huge advocate for the bears, and she's just been such a great help for this project. But you can just see the enthusiasm that she shares. And I've seen the same thing with lots of landowners. They're just excited to contribute to the research, to learn more about the bears. So overall, it's been super pleasant just getting to know, overall
attitudes. So people have been positive on
Absolutely.
This. Because I do hear a mix. I hear a lot of people positive. Then a lot of people are like, well, they're a nuisance. I wish they weren't around. They're in the trash can. They're bothering my corn feeder where I deer hunt, those kind of things. So I want to address some of that when we come back. More with our guest, and we can get your questions on the text line at 343-0106. Christian Hernandez, graduate research assistant from Auburn University, looking at the bears here in South Alabama.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 121 FM Talk 106.5. Midday Mobile, glad to have you along. And a lot of fun talking to Christian Hernandez, graduate research assistant, Auburn University, studying black bears here in South Alabama. And I will get to y'all's text in a second, but I do want to come back to a thing that I know I talked about with Jenna, your predecessor, and all that. You talk about not reproducing at the numbers they should.
Right.
If I remember this correctly, the sows were pregnant with a number of cubs. The cubs just... And they may be born, but didn't make it through that first or second month. Was that the bottleneck, or it was like something like they were having a litter of cubs, but so few of those survived or something
through
like
their first year.
Yeah,
yeah. So what?
So it's not them not getting born. It's something from that cub being born to getting to be a year old.
So that's another question that we're hoping to answer, the cubs not being born, because up until now, there's not really any insight on what's happening during the bear denning period, because it's almost impossible to monitor a female bear without disturbing her. So there is the potential that a lot of cubs are being born that just aren't making it to April. Once April comes around, that's when you can actually get visual monitoring regularly, or you can use radio telemetry to track the bears, which is what we did with Jenna's project. But her big finding was that the cubs were not making it through 1 year. So at some point, there was a lot of different culprits. Flash floods took a lot of cubs.
Really?
Yeah. There's, it's really, in the basin, there's a lot of flash flooding. And our cubs, our big key thing that may be limiting cub survival is they're a lot smaller than other bears in the Southeast. They're probably the smallest cubs.
In the South, so yeah. When that cub's born, just obviously there's big boys and small boys and all that. Average weight.
So to give you an idea, in North Alabama, in March, that's when we would do our den checks, cubs are about 5.5 pounds. And that's pretty normal for southeastern bear populations, 5.5 pounds around March. To give you an idea about the southern bears, we don't visit those dens until April, so a whole month later, and the average weight is around 4 pounds.
So you're that much smaller.
Significantly smaller. And you would think that, you know, visiting cubs a whole month later, they would give them a lot more time to grow and develop. They're smaller. And so there is the
running. What if that's by design? Or, you know, if it's, I mean, you look at what is Bergman's rule, where mammals, as you go further north, are larger. Right. Like, I don't know. I mean, is it, or there, if you looked in Florida, the same time, would that cub be bigger?
So in Florida, they actually have larger cubs.
So okay, so there is something weird going on here.
Yes, and we think the cubs in this population are being born later. And as being born later, it gives them less time to develop in the den before they leave the den. And then when they leave the den, they're at a nutritional disadvantage because they're smaller. And so something like a flash flood, much more likely to kill a cub that's smaller and less healthy.
What's the average, like for a sow here, average of, does she carry one, what do you see, like, one sow to one cub, one sow to two cubs? What makes it through out of April, out of that bottleneck?
So younger females tend to only have one cub.
Okay.
Once they reach around 5 years, they can regularly have 2 to 3 cubs. 3 is very rare for the South because our bears are a lot smaller. Mm-hmm. So two is kind of the sweet spot where we see a lot of females having two. Younger females tend to have just one cub.
All right. We'll grab some questions from the text line for you. Let's see. This texter says, can you have your guest speak about how to handle an encounter with a bear?
So just if you're naturally coming across a bear.
Mm-hmm. I think, yeah.
Okay. So bears are very curious animals, but my experience with bears working in very close proximity with them, they're often much more scared of you than you are of them. I've had male bears 400 pounds plus, and mm-hmm. as soon as they come out of the sedative, they want nothing to do with you, and they just absolutely take off in the opposite direction. So the number one thing is don't run. You just want to make yourself, you know, as big as possible. You don't have to go screaming at the bear, but a lot of the times, if you just make your presence known and you don't startle a bear, mm-hmm. They'll take a look at you, and 9 times out of 10, they want nothing to do with you.
Yeah, you and I were talking during the break, the number of bears I have on camera versus what I see in person, it's a 50-to-1 ratio.
Yeah.
I mean, it's rare that I see them in person. They hear you coming, they're gone.
Absolutely.
But then again, I'm somewhere where they don't, like in the neighborhoods in Saraland, mm-hmm. there's some habituation goes on because of trash cans and all that, and bird feeders and all those things. So they, I think those bears in those settings probably lose some of that. Do you agree? Some of that mm-hmm. immediate flight that they do elsewhere.
And that's probably one of the biggest things you should do if you live in a bear heavy area, is you really want to minimize habituation. And they become habituated when they view humans as a food source. And it doesn't have to be you actively feeding a bear. Doing something like leaving very nutritious trash out. An example, you leave ice cream in the trash can. That's just a sweet treat for a mm-hmm. bear. And so if they start to see human trash cans as a food source, that's when they start to lose a little bit of that fear. And then they do become more of a nuisance in that sense. So making small adjustments to human behavior, you know, keeping trash away, not feeding the bears, really goes a long way in preserving that respect.
This texter said, still, what about the Spanish Fort bear? Must be lonely or not safe. First thing, they're talking about the one that was over there. Right. You know, heck, we had last year before, we had one as close into town here. I don't know if you know where Municipal Park is here mm-hmm. in Mobile. So there was a yearling right there. That's way into town. There's yeah. one that was hit a year or two ago on Cottage Hill inside the city limits. Mm-hmm. But they're talking about this bear in Spanish Fort. What about those populations? You talk about this, you know, we got this isolated population, but you and I don't have to get in my truck and go too far to the east. Just go to Eglin Air Force Base. Mm-hmm. Pretty robust population bears over there. Are those coming, like we hear the story, the bears swim in the bay and all that. Are mm-hmm. those Florida bears coming over here? Or what do you?
So when we're talking about isolated populations, we're mostly talking about females. So females will find themselves a suitable piece of habitat and they will set up home.
Camp out there.
Yep. And so it's the males that are doing all this big traveling looking for females. Once they become subadults, they will travel long distances to find mates of their own. And so I used to work in an Oklahoma state project where we saw bears in Oklahoma in the same summer go over the Ozarks into Arkansas and then back before hibernation looking for females. So males, if you're seeing a bear in Spanish Fort, it's most likely a male bear looking for some females.
And it's pretty much that my reality is it's where I am, and I'm in West Mobile County.
Yep.
It's males. Absolutely. Although I know of a sow that had cubs a little bit further west than me, but it's pretty much they got their butts kicked and they got to go, yeah. you know, or go find some girls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they go chasing females.
Yeah,
not too different from people.
Yeah, exactly. Not much different at all. This is from, I don't know, unnamed texter said, I worked with the biologist last year, and finally we caught a male, named him John Bird. This was close to Highway 96 that I guess funding ran for this year's repeat study. And we're going to talk about that, mm-hmm. too, how you can, so these bears do, a lot of them y'all have data on them, collars, DNA samples, those kind of things, right? Out of our population, you'll put hands on a lot of these bears.
Yeah, we do. Whenever we get our hands on a bear, so we're only collaring the females. Females are really the gold standard here because mm-hmm. that's the metric of a healthy population. Are there females that can allow that population to grow? When we come across a male, we don't put collars on males, but we do put ear tags in them. So mm-hmm. if we do catch them on trail cameras, like you mentioned, mm-hmm. an excellent tool for biologists to get an idea of distribution of bears. Those ear tags are very helpful if we've seen the bear before, and just they all have individual numbers. So just seeing an ear tag can tell you exactly what the bear is and gives you an idea of how they move around the landscape.
Yeah, I bet you there's old biologists that are ticked off at you and your age group because of the technology you have. I mean, just the DNA stuff with hair traps and all that, and go, mm-hmm. oh, that's the same bear from over there, and you're just looking at samples from hair. Mm-hmm. Imagine a biologist 30 years ago looking
at we're spoiled these days.
You were spoiled.
We've got it nice.
You know, you could you could track this. All right, coming back, got more questions, and we're going to talk about how you can help. So just like the texter a second ago, funding for these studies been cut and how we can raise money to get more information about our bears in South Alabama. We continue that conversation next.
With Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 135 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Friday, and good to have Christian Hernandez in studio. By the way, too, a buddy of mine had texted me on my phone here about triplets up at his place, and then you said it's a rare thing, but you're showing me some triplets there. That's something to see.
Yeah, absolutely.
If more of that could happen, then maybe that population recovers.
Definitely be a good sign, to see more cubs being born and hopefully
and then living. That's the thing. So they are being born, but how do we get them to the next stage?
Right.
The flash flood thing was interesting. We'll have these big rains, but something early on when I started paying attention to this 20 or 30 years ago about black bears in Alabama, I had an assumption, which Mom always told me what happens when you assume, but that they were, and I'm a big believer in protecting the Mobile Tensaw Delta. I kind of grew up hunting and fishing in that place. But that's not the prime bear habitat.
No.
It's surrounding upland, not down in the bottomlands.
Right.
But we have this picture, I think a lot of us, big den tree, something like that. We're thinking, you know, bottomland hardwoods, but that's not where they go.
Yeah, well, we don't have those specific, the cypress trees that make great denning habitat in like Louisiana, for example. Mm-hmm. We don't have any of that here, unfortunately.
We have some left, but not, mostly Tupelo gum.
Yeah.
But the populations have been, Saraland has been, the place since I was a kid. What is the formula there? I wonder why they persisted there and kind of, I don't know if it's the core, you do the genetic sampling, but it seems to me the core of bears in our area are centered in Hell Swamp.
Yep, centered in Hell Swamp for sure. That's the pocket that they are in.
They go everywhere, but I'm saying, but that's like this go touch and base. That's base.
Yep, that's it right there. So the flooding doesn't get too bad there.
Right.
I mean, there are definitely wetland areas that they have to navigate through. There is a lot of
But they can swim, unless they get washed off, like if they're cut. Once they're big, once they get, what I imagine, 20 or 30 pounds, water's no issue.
Yeah, absolutely. There's also a lot more food available there.
So that's what I'm trying. So if you go through there and take a transect of 10, 20, 30 acres in there, what food things, what could you replicate elsewhere? Is it a certain amount of blackberries? Is it a certain amount of oak mast? Is it a certain amount,
I think it's a combination of both. So different times of the year, they rely on different food sources. In summertime, berries is a main portion of their food. Come near hyperphagia, when they're getting ready for hibernation, that's when the acorns start to drop. You have masting. And so that's a shift in food sources.
What does it take? You said hibernation. I've talked about this over the years. We don't have real hibernation, right?
They have
they slow
a
down.
Semblance of it. Yeah, they slow
torpor,
down.
Torpor or something like that.
Yeah, so it's not true hibernation. They're not going into that deep sleep, but they will pocket up in an area, and they'll pretty much be stationary for the most part. They can move around definitely more than true hibernating bears. But
is it, okay, with that, is it length of day dependent or is it temperature dependent? In other words, that bear comes in, goes into torpor, slows down. If it warms up, does it get back up and go back to doing bear stuff, or does it stay down for a certain period of time?
So it is tied to not only temperature, but also seasonality. So they'll come out of the den once food becomes available.
Okay.
So around end of April, early May, that's when there's a lot more food on the landscape for them. So that's when they become a lot more active and they'll start dispersing.
What about we talk about interactions with people here? Because this is, you're a scientist on black bears, but they're living amongst people. You got to think about the amount of corn that's put out during deer season.
Absolutely.
Could change that, because that may be a season where there's post-mast or whatever. I mean, mast crop, a lot of places here lasts into December, depends on the year and the kind of oaks we're talking about. But after that, it might be a time that was kind of slim pickings for a bear, but now all of a sudden there's tens of thousands of pounds of corn out.
Right. And so that kind of ties into what we're thinking, right? We're thinking that the cubs are likely being born later in the year. So if there is food available later in the year, then they would delay hibernation. In doing so, that delays when the cubs are born. And then by the time that they're born, they are underdeveloped because they're leaving the den early. So all of these hypotheses, we don't have any conclusive answers, but that's kind of the direction that we're leaning towards. We're trying to figure out exactly when these cubs are being born, because that will answer a lot of questions, right? You go to a doctor, you don't just ask for medicine. You got to figure out what's wrong first.
Mm-hmm.
So once we figure out what's wrong with the population, then you can prescribe the medicine, so to speak, to try to improve population numbers.
Okay, so let's talk about this. All this is research, and this is what kind of put you and I together on this. Been big cuts to the funding for the research on the bears here, right?
Right.
What are we doing here? Because I saw the memo and the email and all that. There's a way to, for those of us that want to know more about our bears, there's a way to help out.
Yeah, absolutely. So the current phase of research is highly reliant on a lot of community support. So we are in the process of trying to acquire another long-term donor to keep the research going, but we're kind of in a transition period right now where we are relying a lot on community support. If you are interested in giving, there is a direct link through the Auburn University website that all donations are tax deductible. It's auburngiving.org/wildlife grants.
And that's going to go, and that's what you and I talked about last week or something on the phone. That does go to the this bear work.
100% to the bear project. So there is no middleman. There's no, it's not going
to other wildlife projects. It's going to the bear work.
100% to the bear project.
And I'll get this at the end of the hour from you and I'll post it up, but is there a place they can go right now? If they're riding down the road, you just gave the address, but they didn't write it down. Is there anywhere online to, like, is your Facebook page or anywhere to go that link is there, that's something easier for people to remember?
Yeah, and I'll share the QR code with you and the link with you as well, and we can share that as soon as we wrap up here. But, yeah, there's a direct QR code that'll take you right to the donation page. And, again, tax deductible, and it goes right to the Bear Project.
Okay. The future, I'm going to ask you this, and then we've got other things to talk about, but future bears in South Alabama, somebody who's been studying it like you, are you glass half full, glass half empty? What do you feel, Christian?
So I think there's a lot of scientific signs pointing to the glass half empty, right? I mean, genetically isolated population, small population size. But I tend to view more on the optimistic side.
Okay.
I see a community that's passionate about bears, that cares about the bears, that's invested in it, helping the bears, and they see bears as, something to respect and something to keep the value of in the ecosystem. So I'm more of a half glass full kind of guy. I think, especially with all the community support and all the widespread support, I think there is definitely a path to recovering this bear population.
And I would, with not having a science education, but a guy that's very interested in this stuff, I feel optimistic too, just because I look nearby. Florida's population, Mississippi coming up, Louisiana has been a stronghold. They have they're having limited hunts now. Their population is good enough. They have tags in Louisiana, very few number. Florida's going to put their hunt back on. That tells me populations are doing good.
Yeah.
That's not that far away. We're not talking about that bear in Oklahoma and Arkansas, or we're talking about a population in western Colorado.
Right.
I think there's a chance. I mean, if it's working there, dang it, I'm an SEC guy. I'm not going to let Florida or Louisiana beat us here.
Yeah. I think that's one of the things that really draws me to bears. They are incredibly adaptable species. I mean, you can see bears in the deserts of Texas, in the swamps of Louisiana and Florida, all the way up to Evergreen, up to Alaska, all throughout British Columbia. I mean, they are incredibly adaptable species. And so if you just give them the space, they will find a way to survive. So that's the biggest thing, is just giving them the habitat that they need, and they will find a way to occupy it and utilize it.
Yeah, think about the habitat, too. Like, I think by square mile, the highest carrying capacity, highest number of bears per square mile, I think is New Jersey, somebody was saying to me.
Somewhere, northeast for sure.
Okay. So, and that's fragmented. I know Pennsylvania, I've spent time up there, my family there, there's fragmented area. There's got to be some formula where there can, because up there, how it is. There's like a neighborhood, and then there's a farm and a block of woods or woodlot, they call it. And then there's another neighborhood, and the bears have figured out how to make it there.
Yeah, it could be a difference in nutritional quality. So even the fragmented population, if the food is good, I mean, and it can fatten up the bears where they can support four cubs and get them all to survival, it's very closely tied with nutrition. So when we look at this population down here, our bears are smaller. That typically reflects less nutritious habitat. So there is food available for them. Is it as nutrient dense as in other places? Probably not. And then the fact that it's a lot smaller habitat where they can't supplement their feed by traveling larger distances, they're really confined to a small area, that kind of puts a limitation on their size and on their nutrition.
So, okay. So there's a combination of things. I thought about that there might be food, but it might not be as nutritious. We think about soils, right? And like out here, a lot of this area in Saraland and out in West Mobile, xeric soils, pretty sandy. It's not as fertile as the Black Belt of Alabama or something like that. But we really don't seem to have a density of population of black bears in the Black Belt where the soil grows tastier acorns and better corn crops and those things. It's just interesting, like, did they not find it, or they traveled through there, and they didn't ever set up shop?
So it's hard. You have to get the females there. That's the key. So
like everything, man. Get the girls there.
Yeah, so if the females are not able to migrate because there's a lack of corridors or there's a lack of a way to get from one population to another, that's really the limiting factor. So, I mean, you can find male bears pretty much all throughout Alabama. Right. There's male bears, but the females really are that limiting factor.
So how would they move? Let's say female has a cub, female cub. How long does she stay with mama before, we know the boys get kicked out and go looking for girls and get kicked out by other males, but females, how does that female cub, she gets to be a year, how does she move, when does she move out? How far does she go?
So the females, they'll stay with mom from birth. They'll stay throughout the first winter, a second winter, so about a year and a half, typically around 14 to 16 months, they'll stay with mom. What we've noticed with our females in the South here, there's a lot of overlapping home ranges. So to give you an idea, and when we're trapping bears to get collars on them and get data from them, one given trap site, you can find four or five different females. So there's a very great deal of overlap in the habitat ranges here where you don't really see that in other populations. So it's a very unique population here.
So there's a chance that female cub really just kind of sets up on the suburbs of mom's range instead of going cross country like that male and finding some new territory 50 miles away or 100 miles away.
That's really the only way that you can get a reproducing female is if they find a way to share. So, I mean, the dominant female is going to get their first pick of stuff. The less dominant females will kind of have to get the scraps, so to speak, follow after. But they can definitely inhabit the same area and utilize the same resources just at different times.
I just wonder, too, then, let's say, and then I'm just picturing it. Here's Mama Bear. Okay. She has a daughter. She moves to the suburb of Mama Bear's area. When she has a cub, and it's a female, does she move to the suburb of the suburb? You know, does it move that way? Is there a chance to go into new areas? Because it sounds like that would be because plenty of boys out there in the mix. We just need to get some more girls on the landscape, more places.
Right. And then I think a big challenge that we're kind of overlooking is how many of those females get to reproducing age. Because, again, we have such low cub survival. So to give you an idea, we only see about 50% of cubs survive that first year. And this, the average in the Southeast is about 76%. So 50% is significantly lower. Yeah. And that 50% actually is likely a lot lower. Last year that we collected data, we had a very unusually high survival rate. So the actual survival that we've been observing for the past 5 years is probably close to the 30-40% surviving.
What's neutral? What keeps the population just at what it is? How many, what kind of reproduction? I mean, at one, I mean, eventually you lose population. At two, do you stay stable? Three, do you increase? Is there a number like that?
So the biggest thing is the biggest factor that limits growth is adult survival. So if we can get a cub to adult survival and they can survive for another 10 years, that is what keeps the population from shrinking.
Okay. But that number, but you got to watch it. I mean, there's a certain point, you hit a certain lack of reproduction that does it go into some spiral that you can't come out of.
I see what you mean. Yeah, I think we don't have that magic number. Okay. But what we've observed in this population is that it has not grown in at least the past 20 years. It's been relatively stable.
Which is wild to me.
Yeah, it's really consistently low.
I mean, the number of bears that I was seeing back in the 80s and 90s is kind of what we got now.
Yeah.
All right, coming back to wrap it up with Christian Hernandez. More questions from the text line at 343-0106.
is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 150 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Friday. Good time to check in with Anna at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. So let's first, Anna, talk about what a week for gold. My gosh, the numbers coming back have been something.
Oh, yeah, and it's been a crazy week. We've had a lot of people coming in to buy and sell, and it's been, you know, a lot of people started buying. going up right now, but it's a, you know, they'll probably do a correction within the next few days, maybe next week, and we'll see what happens. But I just don't think that gold and silver is going to drop that much lower than what it is right now.
It's been something. I mean, I know the other day we talked about, you said, well, people bought back in the 80s and 90s and what their return's been.
Mm-hmm.
People that bought in 2024.
Yes, last year they have already made $1,000 on their gold coins.
Yeah, you know? It's not bad at all. Also, I've been remiss. I've been so obsessed with the precious metals prices not to check in on the jewelry inventory, too. Somebody looking for gift items, what you got?
We have a lot of sterling silver jewelry. We have gold jewelry and diamonds, estate pieces. I have really vintage things, unique things that are been custom made. So it's, you know, different types of unique pieces that you just can't find anywhere else.
Okay. Tell people how to find that place that's not anywhere else. Mobile Bay Coins. Yeah, find you. How do they do it?
At 2204 Government Street in Midtown Mobile. We're just a block west of Little Flower Catholic School. You can also find us on Facebook or our website, mobilebaycoins.com.
Thank you, Anna.
Thank you.
All right. Anna checking in from Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. And wrapping our conversation up for now, I'll probably have to get this man back on the show, Christian Hernandez, Black Bear researcher here in South Alabama. Once again, this is a chance for us to, those of us interested in these bears, to help fund this. And we're going to put this up on our social media. But just, you can go, first of all, you say, somebody's sitting down. The website is, just go to Auburn.
AuburnGiving.org/wildlife grants.
And so, because I answered this question for y'all beforehand, even though it says wildlife grants, these right now, the money going through is specifically for our black bear research, not for other.
100% to the Black Bear Project.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I want to say that. I don't need any fox squirrels in Northeast Alabama study.
It's going to the bears.
Okay, good. Yeah. And the different levels here, I like this, that people can donate in different levels and up to the point that you can be the sponsor of a GPS collar.
Yeah, and I mean, if you are able to give at the highest level and give us really what is the most valuable information. So what we're going to be putting out on our bears, not just normal GPS collars, we're putting camera-enabled GPS collars. And it's cutting edge. You talked about being jealous. I mean, this is brand
new
stuff.
They want to kick you on the shins, I bet.
Absolutely. So it's taking video every 15 minutes, 30-second intervals, 12 hours a day, all throughout the denning period. And that's going to give us...
So you can see, not only is that bear, that sow is here, mm-hmm. what food... I mean, if the camera comes on, you can see what food she's using then and what she's...
Right. I mean, and you can also see, we talked about how many cubs are being born. I mean, scientists have never been able to answer that question for wild bears because you only see the bears when you go visit the den, which mm-hmm. is in March or April. So, I mean, there is the potential that, you know, three cubs are being born, but scientists only see one of them because only one of them makes it to the end. So we might be underestimating, you know, cub survival if more cubs are being born and, you know, dying
before y'all go check.
Yeah. So, I mean, really, these camera collars are going to provide never before seen insight into bear ecology from the perspective of a bear. So, I mean, it's non-invasive. You don't have to be there to physically see what the bears are doing. And at the end of the season, you can drop them remotely. I go find them in the forest once we get those collars back.
So they'll give you a ping when you drop them. It drops and then it pings so you can go find
GPS
the collar.
GPS location. I can go find the collar and the whole time the bear really doesn't have to ever see me again.
There you go. It's pretty cool. I mean, yeah, the technology stuff is just, I mean, that from the tech side or the genetic side. What I was talking about earlier with Christian is like, if you hadn't seen the hair traps, so you can set up where just a bear goes through a screen or fence or something like that, drops hair. These guys can get the hair and tell you, oh yeah, this is that bear.
Yep.
That we got
from hair. You don't have to ever see the bear. You can, they can avoid you. I mean, that's a great way to account for bears that are very shy of humans because, I mean, you set up a barbed wire corral that picks up the hair and you can identify that bear without ever
seeing it. From a stinking hair, y'all.
Absolutely.
I mean, when this
amazing.
First came out, maybe a decade plus ago, but I was like, wow.
It's amazing and it's incredibly accurate, right? If you set up five hair corrals and you see hair at all of them, you might think it's five different bears, but genetics tells you exactly how many bears you have. So it's a very precise science.
I'm going to throw this out too in the fundraising side. Pretty genius text from Michael. He's making fun of me, but he says, Sean, if he gives full access to the camera footage, I think you may go broke. Maybe nobody listens to the show or I spend all my money. But, you know, if that camera footage was available and like you make a donation.
And that is one of the things that we are incentivizing. Yeah, absolutely. If you are willing.
You can watch the if you
absolutely. Once we get that footage back, we will be sharing with you exclusive footage from that from your bear, essentially, the collar that you're helping to purchase.
Okay.
I mean, I am 100% for involving the community. I want the community to feel like an active part of conservation. That's really how meaningful conservation gets done. You have to become, you know, engaged with the community. So if you are interested in bears and this is something that you want to do, I'm more than happy to involve you with the project as much as possible.
So like when my kids check out on TikTok and they're sitting there, my 19-year-old, I can just sit and stare at my phone and have my own thing to look at.
Yeah, absolutely.
What are you looking at, TikTok? No, I'm looking at the bear video, and she wouldn't be surprised. Vince asked this question: are there any chances the bears are eating their young? That's why we don't see them made, that the sows are eating the young.
So there's no cannibalism in the sense of eating their own young because they are hungry or they're nutrient deficient. There are cases in other populations where cubs have died. And once the cub dies of natural causes, the mom can eat the young because, I mean, that's
nutrition. Yeah.
Yeah. But they're not, there's no cases of
infanticide
females. Yeah. Active. There is infanticide from the sense
from the
of males.
Bears.
Yeah.
Right,
males.
Boar bears kill the heck out of it.
Right. Well, male bears have been known to kill the young of other females to breed and then to essentially make their own. But yeah, moms are incredibly protective of their young. So
that happens so many places in the animal world. I like to ruin the people's Disney idea of nature sometimes. I go, hey, well, what about this? They're like, that's a sweet boy bear. And that's a sweet. I said, and he's going to kill her baby so she comes back into season. Right. No. Well, yeah, that's how it goes
a lot of the time, unfortunately.
The mean streets of the woods of South Alabama.
We haven't seen too much of that here, though. That's, so in the South, there's not. I don't think we've had
we just
any
don't have
cases
bears.
Of infanticide. Yep, not too many bears.
All right. I appreciate what you're doing. I'm going to get this information shared. We're going to get the funding and keep this research going, Christian.
Thank you so much, Sean.
It was
a pleasure.
Hey, Christian Hernandez, he's doing the work out there, and we will keep up with the work he's doing and put these links up on our social media feeds as well so you can go check out and give. All right. Yeah, people suggest we sponsor the video stream, but I might do that. We may have our own stream right here at FM Talk 106.5. Y'all just wait. Paul Feinbaum on the way next. See you tomorrow morning. FM Talk 106.5 outdoors at 7.